The following audiobook contains AI-generated content and may contain errors. MyAudiobooks.ai presents Black Cherry Ledger. Elise Marceau finished polishing the burgundy glass with 3 minutes left before the private dining room changed hands. Paris, Left Bank, late autumn of 2026, shortly after midnight. Rain worked at the tall windows in small, patient taps. The last guests had gone upstairs to cars waiting under black umbrellas, and the night sommelier named Camille Beaumont had been dismissed with the rest of service. Camille had a tax file, a rented room near Port d'Italie, and a widowed mother in Tours. Camille also had Elise's hands, Elise's scar beneath the left thumb, and Elise's habit of counting cameras by their motor noise. One dome camera hummed above the mirrored bar. One sat in the crown molding, angled toward the service station. One hid behind the pierced brass grill that masked the ventilation duct. The restaurant called them insurance. The directorate called them memory aids. Elise called them witnesses that lied for whoever paid maintenance. She held the glass by the stem and breathed across the bowl. No lipstick mark remained. No mineral haze. No print from the diplomat who had rolled the glass between his fingers while lying about border security and laughing too warmly at the minister's joke. Elise set it with the other polished stems and checked the silver service cart. One unfinished bottle waited in the well behind the decanter. Its label had suffered the useful indignities of age: foxed paper, receded ink, a crest half rubbed away by damp hands and old cellars. The capsule had been cut cleanly at the lower lip. A thread of wine clung inside the neck, dark as iodine. The year on the label had been written by a hand trained before war changed handwriting forever. 1928. Her right molar pressed into the inside of her cheek until the small pain steadied her. Elise had tasted for fraud in Monaco, for death in Brussels, for poison in rooms where ambassadors called one another friends. She had once built a career on the difference between cedar and pencil shavings, between truffle and rot, between a vineyard's limestone and a handler's planted story. Now she worked stolen service floors under false names and called René Dufour and Leon every Sunday from rotating phones, saying only enough to prove she still had a mind of her own. René would be asleep now, unless she had broken discipline and stayed near the kitchen wall phone with a cigarette burning down between her fingers. Elise pictured that ember and pushed it away. Relationship made poor insulation. It let heat leak out and tracking in. The bottle remained. Across Europe, expensive dining rooms had become silent extraction zones. Ministers brought secrets in their mouths, in their coats, in the nerves beneath their cologne. Surveillance hid in chandeliers and reservation systems. Listening devices lived under tasting menus printed on handmade paper. The directorate, the old private intelligence apparatus that had trained Elise and then buried her, preferred luxury to violence when luxury worked. A rare vintage could be carried through customs as a trophy, poured at a state table, and used to collect what ordinary microphones missed. The 1928 did more than intoxicate. For Elise, conditioned under protocols she still only half understood, its residue converted taste into sensory record. Places, voices, textures, fragments of transaction. Each sip cost her. Headache first, then missing hours, then the terrifying softening of memory around names she needed to keep. Morning security would arrive before 5. Once the day crew opened the lower cellar and found Camille Beaumont missing from the payroll archive, every door in the building would lock under a health inspection pretext. Elise needed the cellar ledger before that shift began. The ledger carried shipping manifests, custody signatures, private table assignments. With it, she could follow the bottle's route and stay ahead of the people who wanted her palate back in their custody. Without it, the directorate would put her in a clean room and pour until she became useful or empty. "Fuck," she said, so softly the glassware kept the word for itself. She took the bottle by the punt and poured less than a mouthful into the polished glass. The wine opened with black cherry, old iron, cigar ash, a sweetness too disciplined to be fruit. Beneath that came wet wool, violet bruised under a boot, and the faint medicinal green of stems picked in rain. Authentic at the surface, wrong underneath. Elise touched the rim to her lower lip. The first taste arrived as wine. The second arrived as architecture. Damp concrete. not a cellar. A loading bay, ceiling low, fluorescent tubes trembling in plastic sleeves. Diesel vapor at the back of the throat. Lavender cologne applied too heavily to a man who disliked sweat. A coat sleeve brushed a crest embroidered on a folded flag. The double-headed eagle, black thread raised against gold. A woman's voice whispered in German-accented French. The Austrian table remains the hinge. Move the bottle before Geneva asks for custody. The headache struck behind Elise's left eye. Sharp, white, immediate. Her hand closed around the stem without cracking it. She spat into the silver bucket, wiped her mouth, and forced herself to write in her leather notebook. Loading bay, lavender, double-headed eagle, Austrian hinge, Geneva custody. Letters crawled at the edge of the page. She closed the notebook and slipped it into the inner pocket of her jacket. The camera in the crown molding gave its tiny corrective whir. Too late, Elise told it. She wiped the rim of the tasting glass, then stopped. A perfect cleaning would erase the proof of her contact and the timing of the sip. A sloppy cleaning would invite questions. She left one crescent of moisture low on the bowl where a hurried commie might have touched it and carried the bottle to the service station, not the cellar. Let them wonder which error mattered. The sommelier's office sat behind the cheese cave and the locked stair to the lower cellar. Elise crossed the empty dining room, shoes soundless on the old parquet. Every table held its small arrangement of absence. Folded napkins gone slack, a breadcrumb near table 6, a smear of wax at table 9 where a candle had drowned itself. The restaurant wore exhaustion well. Expensive rooms often did. At the office door, her borrowed key entered cleanly. The old brass lock clicked once. Inside, a desk lamp burned over inventory cards, cork samples, and a framed award signed by men who had never cleaned blood out of a service corridor. Elise removed the bottom drawer with both hands and set it on the rug. The ledger waited behind a false backing, heavy, leather-bound, smelling of dust and glue. She lifted it into her carry-on, wrapped it in a chef's jacket, and added 2 reserve corkscrews from the drawer. Tools disappeared in restaurants every night. Ledgers did not. A floorboard answered her weight in the corridor. Elise froze with the drawer still half open. Camille, Sabine Roche said from the dark beyond the office door. Or whatever name fits after midnight. Sabine stood with her shoulders squared, black suit immaculate, silver hair pinned low. No panic lived in her posture. Dining room managers learned to face tantrums from billionaires, kitchen fires, allergic reactions, police questions, and men with diplomatic immunity. Sabine had placed herself between Elise and the service exit with the exact economy of a blade laid across a wrist. Elise slid the drawer home. The payroll file is very convincing. Payroll files do not polish stems after dismissal. Habit. Compulsion, Sabine said. Different tariff. From below came the blunt metal rhythm of a door being tested. Security had started early, or directorate men had borrowed security uniforms and improved the schedule. Sabine's chin shifted toward the carry-on. You took my ledger. Your ledger took money from dead countries. My staff need work. My guests need theater. My owners need plausible ignorance. And you need your floor cleaned before police ask why diplomats keep losing secrets over dessert. Sabine's expression tightened by a fraction. Do not bring police onto my floor. Then move. Neither woman touched the other. Pressure traveled through the corridor anyway, through brass handles and waxed walls and the clean little line between professional pride and criminal survival. A radio crackled below. Male voice, French, too casual. Sabine turned her head toward the lower stair. That single shift changed the corridor. She knew the cadence, not her staff, not ordinary police. Her mouth flattened, and Elise saw calculation cross her face with the speed of service, table count, staff count, exits, liability, headlines. Kitchen stair, Sabine said. Down. Left at the laundry cage. Lower door sticks. Pull once, then push with your hip. Why? Sabine took a ring of keys from her pocket and selected one by touch. My room does not become their fucking kennel. The key struck Elise's palm, warm from Sabine's hand. Geneva, Elise said. Who received from Geneva? Sabine's answer came clipped. A broker, Tomas Kroll, lakeside tables, usually. He likes women to think his shoes are expensive. Are they? They are vulgar. Sabine reached past Elise and turned off the office lamp. Go. Elise took the corridor at a fast walk, resisting the body's stupid wish to run, where cameras could measure panic. In the kitchen, the last heat of service clung to copper pans and white tile. A stock pot cooled on the back range, releasing veal, bay leaf, and the sweet mineral reek of bones. The pastry station had been wiped to a shine. Beyond it, the dish pit remained alive. An elderly dishwasher in a plastic apron stood over the sink with sleeves rolled above narrow elbows. His name badge read, Audilon, though Elise doubted the badge mattered much to a man who had outlasted 3 chefs and 2 renovations. He took one warm roll from a basket under a cloth, wrapped it in wax paper, and pressed it into her cold hand. Bread lift is unlocked, he said. It drops to the old bay when the dumbwaiter chain knocks twice. Count after the second knock. Cameras sweep the street before the van backs in. I have no money for kindness. Good. Kindness costs more when itemized. The chain knocked overhead. Once, twice. Odilon jerked his chin toward a waist-high metal door beside the flour bins. Geneva bread came through here at 2:15, not 3. Men in clean coats, no flour on them. Remember that. Elise did. Warm bread steamed against her palm, ordinary and absurd. She tucked it into her coat and climbed into the bread lift feet first, dragging the carry-on after her. The compartment smelled of yeast, grease, and old metal. As the chain caught and lowered her through darkness, the loading bay memory aligned with the present. Concrete damp from rain, fluorescent tubes, the ghost of lavender cologne. The lift stopped hard enough to jar her teeth. She opened the lower hatch onto the service bay. A delivery van idled outside with its rear doors open. The street-level camera above the gate began its slow sweep toward the alley. Elise counted the motor's travel, crossed during the blind portion, and slipped behind stacked crates of mineral water. Rain hit her face, cold and clean in the first inch, filthy after that. Behind her, a door slammed and a man swore into a radio. She kept walking until the restaurant fell behind a block of shuttered galleries and a florist's awning sagging underwater. Only then did she tear the roll in half with her teeth. Butter had melted into the crumb. The taste nearly broke her. At the corner, she took a burner phone from her coat and dialed the Lyon number from memory. Renee answered on the 4th ring. You are late. Paris is loud tonight. Your voice is wrong. Everything is wrong. Elise checked the reflection in a dark boutique window. Wet hair, tucked under a service cap, carry-on low, shoulders ordinary. A black sedan rolled past without slowing. If a woman calls asking for Camille Beaumont, hang up and leave your flat for 2 days. Renee inhaled through the receiver. Cigarette. Kitchen tile. Elise could hear Lyon and the small domestic noises behind her. You found it. I found a door marked Geneva. Elise. The old name, spoken plainly, made the street narrower. Do not say that again on this line. You are bleeding. Elise touched her upper lip. The headache had opened a thin nosebleed. She wiped it with the heel of her hand. Not enough to be interesting. Send me the ledger. No. Then send me where you go. No. Elise, you stubborn bitch. Affection and fury shared the phrase. Elise let both pass through her without answering either. 2 days. No calls. Burn the phone. I will. Eat something first. Elise ended the call, removed the card, snapped it, and dropped the pieces into separate gutters 2 streets apart. Near Saint-Sulpice, bells marked the quarter hour with ecclesiastical indifference. She bought a black coat from an all-night kiosk that sold umbrellas, cigarettes, and bad decisions, then walked toward the station with Sabine's key in one pocket and warm bread in the other. By day 3, Geneva had sharpened her headache into weather. Elise arrived by night train under the name Aline Marchand, carrying the ledger, the leather notebook, 3 shirts, 2 corkscrews, a passport clean enough to pass a tired border guard, and 1,100 euros in cash. She had slept in broken pieces between Paris and Lausanne, waking whenever the train braked, and her skull mistook metal for memory. The 1928 lingered along the back of her tongue. Lavender, damp concrete, Austrian hinge. Lake Geneva lay black under a late evening wind. Hotels threw gold reflections across the water and made the surface look expensive. Elise hated that trick. Money did not purify depth. It only improved the lighting above it. The cafe Thomas Kroll favored sat beneath a striped awning near the quay. Outdoor heaters glowed red over little round tables. Inside, a pianist worked through standards with the resignation of a man paid to make secrets feel continental. Elise chose the terrace, back to a stone column, view of the door, the lake, and the convex mirror mounted above the bar. Tomas arrived 12 minutes late. His shoes were indeed vulgar. Brown leather polished to the wet gleam of chestnuts, buckles too bright, soles too thin for peace and for rain. He wore a camel coat and a scarf knotted with studied carelessness. Custody brokers cultivated harmlessness. Tomas cultivated it badly. "Aline," he said, lowering himself into the chair opposite. "Or may I call you the name that frightens more people? You may call me impatient." He smiled. French hospitality. Check discretion would be more useful. His smile changed without vanishing. Discretion costs. So does stupidity. Elise nodded toward the terrace, toward the details Tomas thought she wouldn't measure. "You asked to meet in a cafe with three cameras, two mirrored surfaces, and a waiter who touches his earpiece whenever the door opens. That waiter has an ear infection? That waiter has government posture." Tomas rested both hands on the table. His nails were buffed. The left thumbnail carried a half moon of dried ink. "You have money? Records first? Money first." Elise opened her menu and slid a folded page beneath it. Not the ledger page. A copy doctored on the train with a fountain pen, altered enough to mislead, true enough to bait. "You receive this if I receive chain of custody from Geneva to Milan. Bottle, crate, name of the carrier, receiving seller." Tomas did not touch the page. "You have the book." "I have a page." "You have the book," he repeated softer. His gaze shifted past her shoulder, then returned too quickly. The convex mirror above the bar gave her the terrace in warped miniature. A man stood beneath the far heater, black overcoat open, hands bare in the cold. Dark hair, heavier at the temples than she remembered. Profile disciplined, mouth quiet, shoulders at ease with danger. Laurent Vanier. For half a breath, the lake, the cafe, and Tomas thinned around the shape of him. Laurent had once taught her how to read a surveillance camera from the way a room avoided it. He had also taught her how betrayal could arrive without raised voices, wearing the same shirt from the night before, offering coffee. He did not signal. He did not approach. He let himself be seen. Elise turned one page of the menu. "You brought a tail." Tomas's fingers flattened. "I did no such thing. The man near the heater belongs to the directorate. Half of Europe belongs to someone. Give me Milan." Tomas's composure cracked. "If you have the full ledger, I can get you sanctuary." "You can get me auctioned." "Sanctuary is an auction with better chairs." Elise slid the doctored page halfway across the table. "Milan." His hand covered the paper. "A private hotel kitchen. Brera district. Crate entered under a diplomatic catering license." The bottle moved again. "Venice after Milan, maybe? Austria after that." "Name." "Receiving sommelier used a false name. Carrier used diplomatic pouch rules. Payment cleared through a Viennese hospitality foundation." "Name." Tomas gave her a strip of paper from inside his scarf. "This gets you the Milan cellar door. Only once." Elise took it with two fingers. On the paper, a phrase in Italian named a fish supplier and a delivery hour. No digits, no code she could not speak aloud, only the kind of sentence that opened service doors. Laurent left the heater and crossed toward the quay. Elise stood, keeping the carry-on between her knees until the last possible instant. "If you sell my description, I sell descriptions for a living," Tomas said. Fear had made him ugly around the mouth. "You should have paid for exclusivity." She leaned down until only he could hear. "Then sell this one accurately. Tell them I am tired, armed with paper, and finished asking nicely. His laugh came out dry. That is not a threat. No, it is a tasting note. She walked away from the terrace without touching her coffee. Behind her, Tomas cursed in a language he had not charged extra for. Laurent's reflection moved in the cafe glass, then vanished among passing pedestrians. Elise cut through a hotel lobby, crossed to a service exit behind a rack of wet umbrellas, and changed scarves in the staff lavatory of a cinema. At Cornavin Station, she bought a ticket to Milan with cash from a machine that asked too many questions and received none. The platform cameras watched her bored. She kept her face angled down, not hidden, merely bored. Bored people survived longer in recordings. The train left Geneva under rain. Elise sat beside a sleeping student and opened the leather notebook beneath her coat. Milan, Brera, private hotel kitchen, Venice, Austria, Viennese Hospitality Foundation, Laurent, visible by choice. Her pen paused over his name. She wrote it anyway. The letters arrived steady. Her hand only began to tremble when she closed the book. Milan on day 6 smelled of espresso, whetstone, frying butter, and surveillance cleaned with citrus wipes. Elise had spent the intervening days moving in narrow bands: station lavatory, cheap pensione, side street, church vestibule, kitchen entrance, hash leaked away in necessary increments. Train tickets, coats, a room rented under a name she would forget on purpose, pain tablets that dulled the headache without touching the deep pressure behind her left eye. By the time she reached the Brera Hotel, she had 800 euros folded into 3 hiding places and a tremor that visited her right hand whenever she stopped moving. The phrase Tomas had given her opened the hotel's side door at 20 minutes past midnight. A kitchen porter with tomato sauce on his sleeve heard Adriatic soul for the breakfast buyer and pointed without interest toward the cold pantry. Rich hotels trusted the old rituals, suppliers, names, practiced irritation. Elise entered with a crate tag clipped to her coat and the carry-on rolling softly behind her. The kitchen breathed after service. Steel counters reflected narrow strips of light. The ovens cooled with faint metallic ticks. A pastry cook piped cream onto tart shells beside the walk-in, earbuds in, singing under his breath. Elise passed him and saw the camera above the dry goods cage rotate to follow. Too smooth. She kept walking. The pantry door ahead stood ajar. Beyond it, a service corridor led to the hotel office and the private elevators. She needed the cellar manifest, not the bottle. The bottle had already moved. The Milan record would tell her who had signed it out. A man in a gray suit stepped into the far corridor. Hotel security did not wear shoes like that. Rubber soles, matte black, field choice. A second man appeared behind the kitchen entrance, pretending to check his phone. The pastry cook stopped singing. The camera above the dry goods made a small adjustment, trapping the corridor in a clean angle. Elise turned into the pantry. Shelves of flour, oil, tinned tomatoes, and vacuum-packed truffles narrowed the space. No rear exit, no window. One service hatch too small for an adult with a carry-on. She set the carry-on upright and reached for the corkscrew in her sleeve, ridiculous as a weapon, better than empty fingers. The gray-suited man entered the pantry. Camille Beaumont, wrong city. Aline Marchand, wrong cafe. Elise Marceau. The name hit tile and stayed there. Her thumb found the corkscrew's foil blade. You have me confused with a dead file. Files can be reopened. A magnetic snap sounded behind the shelving. The narrow panel beside the vinegar rack jerked inward, revealing darkness in Laurent's hand. Elise, he said. Now. No drama in his voice. That made it worse. She cut the gray-suited man across the wrist with the corkscrew blade shallow and bright. He swore and grabbed for her. Elise kicked the lower shelf. Cans of tomatoes crashed across the floor, bursting red underfoot. She seized the carry-on and dove through the panel. Laurent pulled her into a service void behind the pantry wall and shut the panel with a flat metal click. His shoulder pressed hers in the dark. Close quarters returned him to her body before memory could defend itself. Wool coat, damp at the collar. Clean soap. The old trace of tobacco he never smoked in public. Breath controlled under pressure. He placed a small black magnet against the panel's inner latch. Stay low. Go to hell. Later. On the other side, the gray-suited man shouted instructions. Shoes slipped in tomato. The pantry door banged open. Laurent moved through the dark void by touch, guiding Elise with two fingers at the back of her coat, never quite pushing. They emerged into a linen corridor. He reached up and pressed the magnet to a camera mounted above the laundry chute. The tiny status light died. Cute, Elise said. Still collecting blind spots? Still using them. Were you in Geneva for me or for Kroll? Yes. She hated the answer for its efficiency. They crossed the corridor into a freight lift. Laurent used a staff card and the magnet in alternating rhythm, persuading the panel to accept a floor it had no interest in offering. The lift dropped. Elise kept the corkscrew open inside her sleeve. Blood from the gray-suited man marked the foil blade. Her own nosebleed returned, slow and warm over her lip. Laurent handed her a white handkerchief without turning. She took it. You keep linen for rescues now? I keep linen for blood. Romantic? The lift opened onto a private floor undergoing renovation. Plastic sheeting covered the walls. Paint fumes layered over concrete dust. Laurent led her to a room at the end of the corridor and opened it with a key, not a card. Inside waited a rented room stripped of personality. Bed, chair, desk, lamp, taped smoke detector, window facing an inner courtyard. A square of black tape covered the peephole. The bedside clock had been unplugged. Elise entered first and checked the bathroom, wardrobe, curtain hems, vents, under the desk. Laurent remained near the door with both hands visible. Smart or rehearsed. He had always known how to let a woman feel armed while deciding which exit she would choose. No cameras, she said. No active ones. Elaborate. He removed a coin-sized device from the lamp base and crushed it under his heel. Now none. She set the carry-on on the bed and stood between it and him. You trapped me. I pulled you out of a trap. That trap found me through Tomas. Tomas saw you. Tomas saw what I let him see. Congratulations, you remain a manipulative prick. Laurent took the insult without flinch. His face had changed in small ways since she had last allowed herself to study it. Finer lines at the mouth, a scar near the jaw, pale and neat. Tiredness held in reserve, never spent where others could claim it. Directorate wants the ledger, he said. They can file a complaint with the dead. They want you more. I gathered from the men in rubber-soled shoes. Elise. No. She lifted the corkscrew so the blade showed. You do not get my name like it still belongs in your mouth. Pain crossed his features and disappeared too quickly to trust. I came alone. You never come alone. You come with exits, countersigns, dead drops, and a knife in the polite hand. The team upstairs will search kitchens first, then stairwells, then guest floors with cooperation from hotel security. We have less than an hour. We. He leaned back against the door, giving her the room. You can leave through the maintenance balcony when they pass the floor. I will not stop you. Generous. I know what I owe. That made her laugh once, no warmth in it. You owe me years. Yes. The word landed without armor. Elise's grip tightened on the corkscrew. You told them I was unstable. I told them your conditioning was failing. You told them I was dangerous. You were. To whom? To anyone who wanted the archive buried. Laurent's voice lowered. To yourself, when the headaches started taking days. You do not get to dress betrayal in medical linen. I signed the papers. The room narrowed around that sentence. Elise heard plastic sheeting shift in the corridor outside. Distant voices, Italian. A maintenance worker, or a directorate man with a borrowed accent. Her body wanted to move, strike, flee. She stayed still and let the truth expose more of itself. What papers? Laurent's jaw worked once. Not tonight. She crossed the room in three hard steps and set the blade against his throat. Not deep, enough to crease skin. Tonight is what you have. His pulse moved beneath the metal. He kept his hands open at his sides. The erasure protocol. Wine, headache, missing rooms. Renee's voice asking what she remembered of childhood. Elise pressed the blade harder. A red bead formed, startlingly bright. You knew. I helped. She slapped him with her free hand. The crack against his face satisfied nothing. He accepted it. That enraged her more than defense would have. Say it clean, she said. I helped them take memories from you. The corridor outside went quiet. Elise heard her own breathing through the nosebleed, wet and uneven. She lowered the corkscrew before her hand could do something permanent. Laurent touched the cut at his throat, checked the blood on his fingers, and left it. They would have executed you after the Vienna extraction. You knew too much and refused reassignment. I argued for erasure. I thought useless meant alive. Useful to whom? To me. His voice finally roughened. That is the ugliest part. She stepped back. Her calf struck the bedframe. Fuck you. Yes. No, do not agree like that. Do not make confession into furniture. A shout rose two floors below. Doors opened in sequence. The search pattern had reached the renovation level. Laurent pushed away from the door. Balcony, now. Elise turned to the window and worked the latch. Paint had sealed it. She jammed the corkscrew under the sash and levered until the frame cracked. Cold air entered with the smell of rain and exhaust. The maintenance balcony outside ran along three rooms, ending at scaffolding wrapped in mesh. Behind her, Laurent moved a chair beneath the door handle and wedged it tight. You first, he said. I do not take orders from you. Then take the balcony before they shoot the lock. She swung one leg over the sill. The drop below reached six floors to an inner courtyard filled with covered bins and a statue missing one arm. Wind slid under her coat. The tremor chose that instant to return. Her right hand twitched against the frame. Laurent caught her wrist. She almost cut him again. His hold remained firm and careful, thumb away from the pulse point. Elise, do you want help? The question, bare of command, stripped the moment down. She could refuse. He would let her fall before he forced her, and she hated knowing that. She hated him for asking correctly. She hated her body for trusting the shape of his hand. Yes, she said. He guided her onto the balcony. She steadied against the rail while he climbed out behind her and closed the cracked window. A door inside the room burst inward. Wood snapped against the wedged chair. Men shouted. Laurent took her carry-on, passed it to her, then reached for the scaffold ladder. They descended three levels in rain, mesh clinging to their faces. At the second floor landing, Elise's foot slipped on wet metal. Laurent caught the back of her coat and hauled her against him, both of them striking the scaffold pole hard enough to ring it. Pain flared along her ribs. The alley below held a laundry truck with its rear gate lowered. Laurent dropped first, then raised his arms. Elise perched on the last rung. If this is another managed exit, it is a laundry truck. That is exactly what a managed exit would say. A door opened above. Flashlight beam. Italian curse. Elise jumped. Laurent caught her badly. They collided with the truck gate and went down among bags of hotel linen. Her ribs screamed. His elbow struck metal with a sound that made him hiss. Elegant, she said through clenched teeth. I preferred the balcony. They ran. Three blocks later, soaked through and limping, Elise let him unlock a second rented room above a closed tailor's shop. Smaller. Older. No inner courtyard, only a street-facing window with shutters. She checked it with less ceremony. Exhaustion had begun to sand down ritual. Laurent watched from near the threshold. I can leave. Yes. He reached for the handle. Wait. The word surprised her more than him. She set the carry-on by the bed and removed the ledger, then the notebook, then the recorder she had bought in Geneva and not yet trusted. She placed each item where she could see it. Then she sat on the mattress, suddenly aware of the cut on her knuckle, the nosebleed dried above her lip, the cold roll of pain behind her eye. Laurent remained by the door. Rain darkened his hair. Blood from his throat had dried into his collar. "I do not forgive you," she said. "I know. I may never. I know. I want you to come here." His face changed slowly, like a man hearing a language he had forfeited. Elise held his gaze now, deliberately, letting power move where fear had held it. "I am not confused. I am not grateful. I am not yours." "No. If I tell you to stop, you stop." "Yes." "If I tell you to leave, you leave." "Yes." She stood and crossed the distance between them. "I want this, tonight, with all the damage named." Laurent's hands lifted, then stopped short of touching her. "Elise, say it once more." She took his wet lapels and pulled him close enough to feel the restraint in him break its own teeth. "Yes." His mouth met hers with care first, then hunger. Her anger came with it, and her grief, and the old knowledge of his body that the Directorate had failed to erase. He tasted of rain and blood and the bitter hotel coffee he must have been living on. She shoved the door shut with her heel and turned the lock herself. Dawn made no promises in Milan. Elise woke with the taste of sleep and old smoke in her mouth, though neither of them had smoked. Gray light pressed through the shutters. Laurent's head rested on her shoulder, heavy with the unguarded weight of an exhausted man. His arm lay across her waist, not trapping her. The sheet had twisted around both of them. A bruise had bloomed along her ribs where the scaffold pole had struck. A matching bruise darkened his upper arm. Warmth tempted the body towards stupidity. Elise eased out from under him, one inch at a time. Laurent stirred but did not wake. The cut at his throat had reopened slightly in the night. She watched the tiny bead of red gather, then turned away before tenderness could organize itself into an excuse. Her notebook remained under the chair where she had slid it before touching him. The ledger remained locked in the carry-on. Her burner phone showed missed calls from no saved number. She removed the battery, counted her cash, and wrote with a steadier hand than she expected. "Milan trap. Laurent assisted. Confession partial. Erasure protocol. Claims, Vienna execution avoided. Trust value. Unstable. Physical contact, consensual. Judgment compromised." She closed the notebook. On the desk, Laurent's magnetic bypass lay beside his folded shirt. She took the device. Then she took his spare passport card from his coat, not to use, only to slow him. Finally, she left him 200 euros, the white handkerchief washed in the sink and drying over the radiator, and a note written on hotel stationery. "Do not follow loudly." On the street below, Milan entered morning with deliveries and wet bicycles. Elise bought coffee so bitter it scoured the back of her tongue, then boarded the express toward Venice under another name. Her ribs hurt when she breathed. Her head hurt when she thought. Her right hand trembled around the paper cup until coffee spotted the lid. She did not polish the spots away. By day 13, Venice had become a city built for listening. Mist softened the canals and sharpened footsteps. Water slapped stone under bridges. Suitcases clattered over paving. Church bells reported time without caring who used it. Elise moved through the afternoon with 400 euros left, then 300 after the room, then less after a boatman took cash to forget a private landing near a palazzo with green shutters and a family crest dissolved by salt. She had discarded two phones since Milan. Renee's Leon number had rung once from an unknown line and then gone dead. No message, no voice. One ring meant leave. Two meant safe. One meant the line had become a hook. Elise kept the ledger in the carry-on and the notebook against her body. Laurent's magnetic bypass hung inside her coat beside a corkscrew. She had seen him twice since Milan, or thought she had. A dark coat across a station concourse in Padua, a reflection in a pharmacy window near Santa Lucia. Neither sighting yielded proof. Pursuit could live inside fatigue and still kill you. The Venetian cellar had belonged to a noble family that now rented its upper floors for events and its lower rooms to men who paid for privacy. Elise entered through a water door, swollen by age, using a key copied from a caterer's ring in a bar near Rialto. The corridor beyond smelled of brine, mold, old brick, and the faint ammonia of floodwater left too long in corners. Her phone lost signal before the first turn. Good. Also dangerous. Dead zones protected the person inside only until someone else entered. She descended with a penlight between her teeth. Wine racks lined the cellar in warped rows. Most bottles were theater stock. Famous labels, wrong glass, counterfeit dust. Real wealth hid in secondary rooms behind bad locks and boring inventory tags. Elise found the broken bottle near a floor drain wrapped in sacking inside a crate marked for lamp oil. The glass had shattered weeks earlier. Someone had swept carelessly. A cork fragment remained under the crate's inner lip, blackened with dried residue. 1928. Her right hand trembled so hard the penlight beam jittered over the wall. She tucked the light into a crack between bricks, crouched, and lifted the cork fragment with tweezers from her notebook kit. The smell arrived before taste. Old wine, wet paper, iron, and something domestic beneath it. Onion skin. Soap. Gas flame. No, she said. The seller gave the word back in water. She should have wrapped the fragment, logged it, tested later with sugar and distance and a locked bathroom. She should have respected the rules she had written after Brussels, after the day she woke in Hamburg with no memory of the train and a stranger's blood under one fingernail. Controlled dose? Clean basin. Witness if trusted. No second contact within 72 hours. Her hands moved without ceremony. She touched the cork to her tongue. Wine, rot, dust, then flour on a wooden table. A kitchen, small, blue-tiled, warm from a gas stove. Elise's childhood hands, chubby and dusted white, pressing circles into dough. A woman humming off-key. Her mother's hands, strong, nails short, lifting a pot lid. Steam smelling of chicken, leek, parsley. Rain at a window, a chipped yellow bowl. A man's coat over the chair, dark and wet at the shoulders. Lavender cologne entering before the man did. Elise made a sound low in her throat and grabbed the rack beside her. The memory sharpened. The man with lavender cologne set a bottle on the table. 1928. He spoke to her mother with bureaucratic patience. Only a drop. Children encode differently. We need the palate before language hardens. Her mother said, "She is 7. Elise, the man said, kneeling. Can you tell me what the wine remembers? Her small hand reached for the glass. Her mother knocked it away. Red wine spread across flour, dark veins in white dust. Men entered through the back door. One caught her mother by the wrists. No screaming. The old memory carried no sound there, only with the scrape of chair legs and Elise's own child body under the table, tasting wine from her fingers, trying to be clever, trying to help. Saying, stone, cold stone, a room with maps. The cellar returned in pieces. Brick under her palm. Water over her shoe. Penlight beam. Her adult mouth full of bile. The vintage had not been designed around her gift. Her gift had been built around the vintage. Elise spat onto the floor, then retched until nothing came. Pain opened behind both eyes, symmetrical and vicious. The tremor traveled up her forearm. She pressed her right hand under her left armpit to pin it. Childhood had never been blank by nature. The directorate had hollowed it and sold her the echo as trauma. Laurent had known. Renee, perhaps not. Sabine, perhaps more than she had charged. A scrape sounded above. Elise killed the penlight with her thumb and crouched behind the crate. Footsteps crossed the ceiling. One person, heavy, unhurried, then another at street level outside the water door. No voices, professionals. She wrapped the cork fragment in wax paper from Odilon's roll, still folded in her coat after all these days. The bread was long gone. The paper had kept its butter stain. Ordinary fat, now carrying evidence of the thing that had split her life in two. She placed the wrapped cork inside the notebook's rear pocket. The water door handle turned. Elise moved deeper into the cellar, past counterfeit Bordeaux and real damp, toward a maintenance shaft marked by rust stains. Her shoulder scraped brick. Her ribs protested. She used Laurent's magnet on the service latch and felt the mechanism release with a reluctant click. Behind her, a man entered the cellar and switched on a flashlight.
"Elise," Laurent called.
His voice carried through brick, low, and controlled. She closed the maintenance hatch between them and climbed into darkness. By day 16, Vienna received her like a final bill. Cold settled in the streets before midnight. The Grand Hotel near the Ringstrasse shone with diplomatic confidence. Flags at the entrance, polished brass, black cars, white-gloved door staff trained to see everything and appear improved by seeing nothing. Inside, a state banquet moved through courses under chandeliers large enough to hide antennas, microphones, and the sins of several ministries. Elise arrived under the name Celine Arnaud with 200 euros, one clean blouse, one cracked rib, one worsening tremor, the stolen ledger, the leather notebook, the cork fragment, Laurent's magnet, and a hidden recorder sewn into the lining of her jacket. Sabine had arranged the recorder through a chain of favors that never touched names. One switch armed it. One pressure on the seam sent the file through channels Sabine called her old service lift, the same tone she might use for a dessert trolley. Three newspapers waited at the other end, each hungry enough to publish and cautious enough to verify. Renee's line had gone silent. Elise had called once from a payphone outside Salzburg, speaking no name, asking for the price of apricots. A man answered in Renee's flat voice and said, "Sweet this year?" Wrong code, wrong cadence. Elise hung up and pressed her forehead against the cold glass of the booth until the tremor passed. Renee had either run or been moved. The only mercy lay in refusing to test the line again. Vienna's hotel cellars ran beneath the banquet hall in vaulted corridors of brick and limestone. Elise entered through the florist's delivery door with a crate of white roses balanced against her hip and a borrowed badge clipped to her lapel. Banquet chaos protected her for 7 minutes. Servers moving in pairs, cooks cursing over timing, a junior manager trying to locate a missing fish course, an electrician on a ladder swearing at a decorative sconce. Every face carried urgency. Urgency made excellent cover. She left the roses beside a service station and descended the cellar stair. Cold deepened below. The vaulted corridor smelled of stone, cork, bleach, and expensive fear. Crates lined the walls, each tagged by table and course. Champagne for the toast, Riesling for the fish, Burgundy for the minister who insisted on Burgundy with everything and mistook arrogance for expertise. At the far end, behind a locked cage, one bottle stood upright in a padded travel case. The 1928. Elise's mouth filled with saliva and dread. The body remembered training before the mind consented. Her right hand began to tremble. She trapped it against her thigh and approached the cage. A camera watched from above the arch. She raised Laurent's magnet and pressed it to the housing. The status light died. For once, his tool obeyed her better than he had. "Elise," Laurent said behind her. No surprise registered in her muscles. Some part of her had counted him into the room before sound. She kept facing the cage, key pick in left hand. "You are late." "I came as fast as I could." "Touching. Did you bring execution papers or flowers?"
"Neither."
"Then you are underdressed for Vienna." He stopped several paces away, close enough to speak, far enough to respect the corkscrew she'd already opened. "The banquet upstairs is wired. The cellar is not, after your magnet. You have a narrow window."
"My favorite architectural feature."
"Elise." She turned then. Laurent looked worse than in Milan. A bruise yellowed along his jaw. His coat hung open, rain beating on the shoulders. No visible weapon. Visible meant nothing. His eyes held hers with an exhaustion that made no claim to innocence.
"You followed quietly," she said.
"I tried."
"Did you tell them Venice?"
"No."
"Did they find it anyway?"
"Yes."
"Elaborate."
"They found Tom's."
"Of course.
Thomas with his vulgar shoes and expensive fear."
"Dead?"
"Alive when I left."
You expect gratitude for that? I expect nothing. She slid the pick into the cage lock. Excellent. Continue expecting. Laurent took one step closer. The final bottle is not evidence. It is a recall trigger. I know. His face changed. Venice. Childhood kitchen. Flower. Yellow bowl. My mother's hands. Lavender cologne. She twisted the pick. The lock resisted. You may choose where to start apologizing. I recommend before the men held her wrists. Laurent closed his eyes once, then opened them. The act cost him. Elise refused to spend that cost for him. I joined after they took you from the house, he said. I was not there for your mother. Convenient boundary. Yes. His voice stayed low. Ugly things often have convenient boundaries. I monitored you later. Training, tastings, recovery rooms. You were already valuable. You were also refusing obedience in ways they could not tolerate. I was 7. You were 24 when Vienna happened. The pick slipped. Metal scratched metal. Elise reset it. Say it. You reconstructed a minister's private sale of border intelligence during a banquet here. The directorate wanted the record buried. You kept a copy in your head and refused transfer. My head belonged to me. I know. No, you do not know. You inventoried it. He flinched then, a real one. Good, Elise thought. Bleed internally, it improves the structure. Laurent took a folded paper from his coat and placed it on a crate between them. He stepped back before she could accuse him of baiting. Names of the physicians, facility outside Lyon, authorization chain. Another gift. A debt fragment. The lock clicked open beneath her left hand. She opened the cage and lifted the bottle's case. The weight struck memory through muscle. State dinners, white gloves, quiet rooms. Men asking a young woman to describe not wine but betrayal, then congratulating one another on her accuracy. What happens when I drink it? She asked. Laurent's answer took too long. She laughed without humor. That bad. The full protocol returns, not cleanly. Your mind will try to index everything at once. Childhood training, Vienna fieldwork. You may seize, you may lose speech. You may recover too much to separate then from now. And if they pour it for me? They will control the questions. She removed the bottle from its padding. So I control the pour. Do not do this. There he is. Elise, listen. No. I helped erase you to keep you breathing. I have lived with that and called it strategy, cowardice, mercy. Everything except love, when love would have made it worse. If you drink that, they may get what they wanted from the start. You still think the central danger is what they get. The danger is what it costs you. My cost stopped requiring your approval years ago? Bootsteps sounded from the far stair, more than one person. Slow, official. Laurent's head turned slightly, measuring distance. Elise placed the bottle on a tasting crate and cut the capsule with the corkscrew's blade. Her right hand shook too hard, so she used the left. The cork emerged in one damp piece, dark at the base, fragrant with old blood and roses left too long in a closed church. A man entered the cellar with 2 security officers behind him. Director Armand Valot had not aged so much as condensed. Elise remembered him from fragments, silver hair, careful cuffs, a voice trained to forgive itself. He wore evening dress beneath a dark overcoat and carried no weapon. Men like Valot outsourced the vulgarity of guns. Madame Marceau, he said, you have led everyone through a very expensive itinerary. Elise set a clean glass beside the bottle. Director? Laurent, disappointing. Laurent shifted, placing himself neither in front of Elise nor beside Valot. The geometry mattered. Elise tracked it without trusting it. Valot removed his gloves, finger by finger. The ledger, please, then the notebook. Then we will discuss medical supervision. Your euphemisms have gone flabby. Pain does that to wit. Not mine. One security officer moved toward her. Laurent stepped into his path. No weapon drawn. Just body angle decision. Valo's mouth tightened. Do not add stupidity to romance. Elise poured the 1928. The wine struck the glass with a soft, thick sound. Color gathered in the bowl. Garnet shading to brick at the rim. Sediment turning slowly near the bottom. Her head pulsed in answer. Valet raised one hand. The officer stopped. Madame, Valo said almost gently. A full dose without preparation may destroy the very record you hope to protect. Now you value preservation? I value utility. Honest, finally. We can restore you under supervision. You mean interrogate me while calling it care? You have always preferred melodrama to obedience. Obedience tastes like corked wine, damp cardboard, wet cellar, dead fruit. Once recognized, never mistaken. A small device vibrated against Elise's ribs, the recorder armed under her jacket seam. She pressed the switch through the cloth. One click, hidden beneath the distant swell of applause from the banquet hall above. Valet heard nothing. Laurent did. His gaze dropped to her jacket seam, then rose. He understood. He gave no sign beyond stillness. Elise lifted the glass. Laurent said, Elise. She paused, not for permission, for the last version of herself that still wanted someone to pull the glass away. What? She said. His voice moved lower. Steer by what you choose first. Nautical to the end. She almost smiled. Fuck your compass. Then she drank. The wine entered her mouth, velvet dark and alive with rot. She swallowed before instinct could reject it. Pain detonated. No elegant tasting note survived the first wave. Her knees struck stone. The glass shattered beside her hand. Voices stretched, flattened, returned as files opening in the skull. Childhood kitchen. Flour. Her mother's yellow bowl. The man with lavender cologne named Dr. Alain Morel. Payroll routed through a cultural foundation in Luxembourg. Her mother's face furious, refusing to cry. A train compartment. A recovery room outside Lyon, white blinds, Renee younger, hair pinned badly, slipping Elise sugar cubes after induced tastings. Laurent behind observation glass, 27, expression sealed, hand against the pane when Elise seized. Vienna 8 years earlier, banquet hall above the same stone. Minister Vogel speaking near a service alcove. Border telemetry transfers after dessert. Elise writing it in a notebook with a green cover. Valo saying, if she retains autonomous recall, terminate. Laurent saying, erase the index, leave the engine, she can be used later. A doctor asking, consent? Valo laughing once. Laurent silent. Elise strapped at the wrist for a medical procedure coded as sedation, not violence in any file that survived. Her body tried to fold around the memories. She forced air in through her teeth, stone under knees, blood in mouth where she had bitten her tongue, recorder seam beneath her left fingers. Choose first. She began to speak. Record begins. Vienna, Grand Hotel cellar, late autumn, state banquet overhead. Present. Director Armand Valo, Directorate Regional Command. Laurent Vanier, Surveillance Division. Two security officers, hotel access obtained through diplomatic service credentials. Camera above North Arch disabled. Secondary camera inside champagne cage concealed behind temperature gauge, still active unless Laurent's magnet reached it. Valo moved. Stop her. Laurent struck the nearer officer in the throat with the heel of his hand, fast, ugly, efficient. The man went down against the crates. The second reached inside his jacket. Elise kept speaking. Words cut through pain by becoming inventory. Shipping ledger stolen from Paris Left Bank restaurant under false placement of 1928 vintage after diplomatic dinner. Paris receiving manager Sabine Roche opened lower service exit under duress from illegal sweep. Her staff uninvolved in extraction. Repeat, staff uninvolved. Loading bay pickup at 2:15 in the morning. Men in clean coats without flour. Lavender cologne on Dr. Alain Morel's courier. The second officer drew a compact pistol. Laurent caught his wrist and drove it into the crate edge. The gun clattered. Valo stepped backward, not from fear, from calculation. Elise saw him choose distance from recordings, fingerprints, broken glass. She dragged the ledger from her carry-on and shoved it open on the stone. Pages fluttered. Her right hand trembled uselessly, so she pinned the book with her forearm. Geneva custody broker Thomas Kroll received chain fragment for payment through Lake Meridian Hospitality, account named in ledger under autumn tasting consignment. Thomas Kroll believed commodity was a rare bottle. He lacked protocol knowledge. Geneva Terrace camera facing lake captured my trade of a doctored page. Laurent Vanier appeared deliberately visible to accelerate my movement. Elise, Valote snapped. You are compromised and medically unstable. Any statement you make is worthless. She laughed, and blood ran over her lower lip. Then why are you sweating? He touched his collar. He was. The banquet applause above swelled again, then cut off. Somewhere in the building, phones began to vibrate in pockets. Not yet consequence. The file needed to leave. Elise pressed the seam twice. The recorder warmed against her ribs. Sabine's channel had either opened or failed. No proof would come in time. She continued. Milan trap executed through hotel kitchen corridor. Directorate team used closed circuit camera access and hotel security cover. Laurent Vanier disabled lobby camera by magnetic bypass and removed me to a rented room. Confession there, he signed erasure documents. His exact statement. He helped them take memories from me. Laurent absorbed the sentence while driving the second officer into the cage. His face gave her nothing. Good. Let the record take what romance softened. Venice Palazzo Scheller contained broken 1928 bottle. Cork fragment recovered. Residue triggered original childhood conditioning memory. Blue tiled kitchen, yellow bowl, flower, mother present, Dr. Alain Morel administering preliminary palate encoding to a 7-year-old child. Mother resisted. Men entered by rear door. This establishes non-consensual experimentation on a minor by directorate medical staff. Valet's composure cracked. Enough. No. He lunged for the ledger. Elise seized the neck of the opened bottle and swung. Glass struck his temple with a thick, final sound. The bottle broke, wine and blood splashing across his white shirt. Valet staggered against the crate, shock making him briefly human. She rose on unsteady legs and pressed the jagged bottleneck against the air between them. Back. Valet's hand went to his temple. Red spread through silver hair, not fatal. Shame would hurt him more. From above came the hard descending rhythm of people on stairs. Too many for directorate. Hotel staff, police perhaps, journalists perhaps, or a fresh team. Elise could no longer parse the building cleanly. Memory overloaded every corridor with prior versions. Laurent picked up the fallen pistol and removed the magazine, then the chambered round. He kicked both under separate racks. Elise, finish. She swallowed blood and spoke faster, colder. Vienna prior event, 8 years earlier. Minister Vogel. Border telemetry sale. Directorate order from Armand Valot to terminate if autonomous recall persisted. Laurent Vanier proposed erasure instead. Medical facility outside Lyon. Physicians Morel, Fournier, Kessler. Authorization chain and paper now on crate beside wine cage. Ledger page marked with double-headed eagle crest links, Austrian banquet table to current operation. Hidden cameras in European restaurants used for state extraction under Hospitality Foundation cover. Staff at Paris, Milan, Venice, and Vienna functioned largely without knowledge under managerial coercion or false compliance claims. Operational culpability sits with directorate command, medical contractors, diplomatic carriers, and financial handlers named in ledger pages 23 through 41. Page markings spoken as signatures rather than numbers. Vallo, Morell, Kessler, Paxton, Ivers, De Winter, Chabrol. Her legs weakened. Laurent moved toward her. She raised the broken bottleneck and he stopped. Residue file attached, she said. This statement made by Elise Marceau, former directorate asset and witness, while under active attempt at recovery by Director Armand Vallo. I am of sound enough mind to know who benefits if you call me mad. The recorder clicked once against her ribs. Sent or dead? The stair door opened. Sabine Roche entered first. Not physically, not in the impossible way of a Paris manager materializing in Vienna. Her voice came from the phone in the hand of the hotel's banquet director, a thin man whose face had drained to the color of uncooked pastry. He held the device away from his ear on speaker. Behind him stood two Austrian police officers, three hotel security staff, and a woman in a black press coat with a recording badge tucked badly under her scarf. Sabine's voice cut through the cellar. Touch my staff in Paris, and every kitchen in Europe receives your photograph by breakfast. The file is with three editors. The ledger scans follow in 6 minutes. Armand, step away from the girl. Vallo, bleeding into his collar, gave a small incredulous laugh. Sabine, still playing maitre d' to criminals? I prefer criminals who tip. The presswoman raised her own recorder. Hotel security noticed the pistol parts under the wine rack. One Austrian officer said something measured and official in German. Elise caught only fragments through the pounding in her head. Weapon, medical, statement, ambulance. Laurent lowered his hands and stepped away from the officers. He placed himself where the police could take him without crossing Elise. Choice or theater? She lacked the strength to care. Vallet straightened, recovering his class one vertebra at a time. This woman is a fugitive under sealed international medical authority. The presswoman said in French, sealed by whom? Vallo turned toward her. The wrongness of being questioned on record in a cellar while bleeding on evening dress moved across his face with more violence than Elise's bottle strike. Sabine's voice returned from the phone. By breakfast, nobody will remember which seal they were paid to respect. Armand, I suggest posture. You have always loved posture. Elise sank onto a crate. The broken bottleneck slipped from her hand and struck stone. Wine spread between the cracks, carrying what remained of 1928 into dust and old water. An Austrian officer approached her slowly. Madame Marceau, medical help. No sedation, Elise said. He paused. No sedation without your consent. The phrase entered the cellar, plain and almost unbearable. Elise nodded once. Consent. A small word with teeth. Laurent stood near the wine cage with his wrists being cuffed in front, not behind. The officer had chosen courtesy or caution. He met Elise's attention across the cellar. No plea, no claim. Blood marked his knuckles. She wondered which memories he had hoped would never return and which he had prayed would. Did it send? She asked the banquet director. He held the phone toward her. Sabine answered. Yes. The word did not save anyone. It changed the next hour. Police took Vallo upstairs under medical protest. The presswoman followed at a distance, speaking into her recorder with a calm that made panic useful. Hotel managers began producing keys, access logs, staff rosters. Once journalists had names, everyone wanted to have cooperated first. Directorate watchers withdrew from the banquet floor in pairs, then singly, then not at all when police blocked the staff exits. Men who had been invisible at dinner acquired coats, briefcases, and urgent reasons to call embassies. Cameras that had lied for years suddenly preserved truth by accident. Elise gave the ledger to the Austrian officer only after photographing each open spread with the presswoman's device and repeating Sabine's channel address aloud in spoken fragments. No written trail for a shaking hand to lose. She surrendered the cork fragment last. The wax paper still showed the butter stain from Paris. The officer bagged it with care that might have been procedural and might have been reverent. Elise could not afford reverence. She asked for a chair. Laurent remained uncuffed beside a different officer by then, answering short questions in German. Elise understood enough to hear him confirm his own role without sanding off the edges. Erasure authorization, surveillance access, Milan extraction, no mention of love. Good. Love belonged nowhere near legal record. It contaminated the sample. At some point, the phone with Sabine's voice went silent. The banquet director said the line had dropped. Elise pictured Sabine in Paris, standing in her immaculate dining room before dawn, rerouting staff schedules, destroying old favors, saving who she could while charging the rest to experience. Sabine would survive. Not cleanly. Clean survival belonged to fairy tales and official statements. Rene remained unaccounted for. That thought hurt more than the headache. Elise held it carefully without pressing. If Rene had run, silence protected her. If Rene had been taken, Elise's file had made her captors cautious. Caution could become time. Time could become an exit. Elise had lived on thinner hope and called it logistics. Paramedics arrived with a blanket and questions. She refused transport twice, accepted a blood pressure cuff, refused an injection, accepted water, and kept one hand on the empty place where the recorder had been cut from her lining. Her right hand trembled openly now, no point hiding it. Witnesses saw, witnesses mattered. Near 4 a.m, after statements blurred into signatures and signatures blurred into carbon copies, the presswoman crouched in front of her. "I need to ask one thing," she said. "Do you want your name withheld?" Elise tasted the question, not the way she had tasted wine. No hidden architecture, only risk, consequence, fatigue. "No," she said. The presswoman waited, perhaps expecting more. Elise gave none. Laurent was led past her toward the stair. He paused only when the officer paused. "Elise." She tightened the blanket around her shoulders. "Do not ask for absolution in a cellar." "I was going to ask if you can walk." That almost ruined her. Ordinary concern, well placed, could slip beneath armor where confession failed. She hated him for the accuracy. "Yes," he nodded. "Steer by what you choose next, then." "Still a terrible line." "I know." The officer guided him up the stairs. Laurent went without turning back. Elise listened until his steps joined the others above and disappeared into the machinery of consequence. Police released her into the Vienna dawn with a receipt for seized property, a borrowed coat, and the kind of legal ambiguity that made men in ministries sweat through undershirts. The immediate directorate restaurant network had frozen. Sabine confirmed through a hotel clerk's private phone that Paris staff had been sent home before any retaliatory sweep. Milan's hotel kitchen had reported the pantry incident as organized crime and then abruptly cooperated with journalists. Geneva's cafe cameras had been copied by a waiter with an ear infection that now looked strategic. Tomas Kroll had vanished from his apartment, leaving behind 3 vulgar pairs of shoes and a safe full of custody receipts. Alive then, or vain enough to pack. Vienna's streets held the blue-gray hour before commerce. Sweepers moved along the pavements. Delivery vans sighed at curbs. The flags outside the Grand Hotel hung limp after a night of representing men who had misplaced control. Elise walked without hurry, though her legs shook beneath the borrowed coat. Her skull carried too much now, the blue tiles, her mother's bowl, the white blinds outside Lyon, Rene slipping sugar into her palm, Laurent behind glass, Valo laughing over the word consent, her own younger voice describing rooms she had never entered, and making powerful people rich with fear. Recovery did not feel like return. Return suggested a house still standing. Elise had received ruins, inventories, bones with labels tied neatly around them. Every memory demanded placement. No hand reached from the past to arrange them kindly. She would have to do that work awake. A small cafe near the tram line had opened early for drivers, nurses, and men whose suits had outlived their nights. Elise took an outdoor table under a heater that clicked more than it warmed. The waiter offered coffee. She ordered cheap house white wine in French, then repeated it in German when he hesitated. He shrugged. Vienna had seen stranger grief before breakfast. The glass arrived thick-stemmed, cloudy at the foot, filled too high with pale wine from a box or a bottle that wished it were a box. No pedigree, no theater, no old year waiting to eat her life. She lifted it and smelled. Grapes, sulfur, cold storage, a sour edge from a line that needed cleaning. Nothing else, no loading bay opened behind her eyes, no child's kitchen rose from the bowl, no double-headed eagle brushed against a sleeve. The wine had no memory beyond its own cheap making, and for that she could have blessed it if blessing remained among her skills. She drank one small mouthful. Bad. Honest in its limits. The taste sat on her tongue and went nowhere. Across the street, a newspaper van stopped at a kiosk. Bundles hit pavement with soft, heavy thuds. The first editions would carry careful language, alleged network, former asset, hospitality foundations, European inquiry. By noon, names would move faster than denials. By evening, the directorate would amputate the exposed limbs and call the wound strategic. The deepest archive still lived in Elise's head. No court could hold all of it. No journalist could print the whole damage. No lover could confess it clean. She set the glass down. Her right hand rose by habit. Thumb to rim, cloth absent. Old compulsion, searching for polish. The motion began with the same precision she had used in Paris. Erase the print. Remove the trace. Leave the room clean enough for someone else's lie. Elise stopped halfway around the rim. Her thumb remained on the cheap glass, pressing one visible mark into the place where her mouth had been. Dawn brightened by a degree. The wine trembled, then settled. She left the print there, unfinished and readable, while the city began taking statements from the light. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.